everybody, it's Sam with Rowdy Alternative, and today we have a special treat here. We're going to catch up with our buddy Corey Coverstone. Those who don't know, LA-based drummer, he was with Dirty Honey for a while, and he does many other things we're definitely going to hit on. Very talented drummer, really cool to follow along with, so yeah, man, how have you been, dude? It's been a while.
I've been good. Excuse the throat lozenge at the moment. Getting over a cold here.
Me too. But
you too?
Oh, dude, it's bad.
It's going around, right? The fuck?
Yeah, I know. Fuck it.
My girlfriend has pneumonia right now. I don't know if I should say that, but... anyways, yeah. What's up? By the way, people watching, we message each other once in a while on Instagram and text and stuff and keep in touch here and there. But other than that, we haven't really caught up except for right now. And we had about 10 seconds before this started. And we're just like, let's just live. Let's do it.
I have a bad habit of when the guest comes on, I talk for 2 minutes. I'm like, well, shit, that could have all went on the damn episode. It would have been better content than you know what I mean.
I get it.
I think the last time you might have only been my fifth episode the first time around, man, and now we just passed 50 actually, so we're cruising on
Congrats.
This end. And yeah, man, you're also the first second round I've had with anyone on here.
That's awesome. I'm honored. Man, thank you so much.
Of course, yeah. I always love talking to you, man. You're a very interesting guy. You're always doing some really cool shit. So I guess let's talk about what are you up to when it comes to, I know you have the Good Day Latte going on. You have the website going on where you do the lessons and all that stuff. So I guess just kind of catch us up with what you're up to.
Well, the last year or so, I've been working really hard on launching this brand, wellness beverage brand, turmeric and mushrooms based. And it's been going well. I've just been hustling. You know, we're in about, I think, 20 or so coffee shops and boutique stores across the country. They're either serving it or selling it or both. And just continuing to push it and grow and build awareness and collaborate with people. And it's been super fun to do something completely unrelated to music. That's obviously all I focused on pretty much my entire life up until a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And so it's been a steep learning curve, albeit a fun one. Getting to collaborate with some awesome people. I just posted a little video with Bruce Christman. We did something with him before when we were doing a sample round. But he's, for those who don't know, I ride BMX. I ride mountain bikes as a hobby, which has gotten me into trouble being a drummer because I've broken my arm in three places now.
Jesus.
We can touch on that too. I'm recovering from a broken arm actually now still. But, where was I going with that? Yeah, I ride BMX, I ride bikes. So it's been cool, having a means to, collaborate with people like Bruce Christman, who's, a BMX legend. He won X Games back in the 2000s and he's actually from Portland, Oregon, where I'm from. So he's been somebody that I've looked up to for a long time. And, it's cool. It's totally different and fun and exciting to see what's going to happen. And yeah.
Yeah, and I want to definitely hit more on that, but I guess since you mentioned it, how'd you break your damn arm? What kind of maneuver were you doing?
Dude, well, to preface that story, you got to start by saying that I may have been still slightly concussed from the day before where I got into a really bad car accident, rolled my car on the 405. Those who are familiar with Los Angeles, no, that's a notorious freeway. bad car accident. Everybody was fine. Just a little rattled. Car was totaled, though. The next day, I went and rode and was maybe a little, just kind of in shock still or affected by that. Maybe concussed. I don't know. And midair off one of the jumps I've hit a million times. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do an opposite X up. That's where you turn the handlebars towards your back foot, I guess. on a bike, and which I've done before. And for some reason, my left hand came off while I was in the air. So now my handlebars are backwards. I'm 4 or 5 feet in the air. The right hand is on the left side, and my left hand is off the bike. And I'm just like, what the fuck am I doing? I've never done this before. Needless to say, it didn't work out. I slammed the ground pretty hard, got another concussion, broke my, was it the radius bone in the elbow, and then the scaphoid bone in the wrist. Yeah, dude.
Good
It's,
God, dude.
I don't know. I'm getting too old for this shit, I think, but I can't stop.
I was about to say, at least you're keeping yourself active, but Jesus, sounds like you're just breaking yourself at the same time.
Yeah, I gotta try and be more careful, maybe. I wear a helmet though,
That's good.
so
That's good.
at least the I got the peanut protector on, as my mom called it.
Oh, man. But,
So that's kind of what I've been up to. I mean, with this sort of side hustle turning main hustle, and I mean, playing drums still, of course, teaching. I have a little, home studio set up, so I record drum tracks for people when they reach out, and it's been pretty chill playing wise. Nothing as extravagant as opening for Guns N' Roses in stadiums and stuff like I was doing before, but
Yeah,
it's
but
good.
like,
It's true.
yeah, and you said earlier, you said it's like a good like refresher kind of to do something completely unrelated from music. Is that like the main reason? Was it how did it start out? Like, was it just like, hey, it's an extra, like you said, a side hustle, or was it something you've been wanting to get into, like even
It's
before that? Or?
kind of been something I've been wanting to get into for a long time. That's coffee adjacent. I'm like very into coffee, have been for a long time, and but also grew up with health and wellness kind of at the forefront of my upbringing, and have always been interested in that, and liked learning about and experimenting with different ingredients and things that could maybe, like, I don't know, boost physical performance, riding bikes and stuff and playing drums, and mental performance as well, clarity and all that. And so yeah, I mean, it's been something that I've experimented with for a long time, turmeric and functional mushrooms and adaptogens, and started just kind of making it in the background years ago just for myself, and then would make it for people here and there. And once I was no longer a part of Dirty Honey, was kind of experimenting more with it, and people at the same time were like, this is really good, you could probably do something with this. And so that was it was just kind of a perfect timing thing where I was like, well, I can do it now. I've kind of always wanted to try something like this, and so yeah, I just kind of went for it and was fortunate to have some mentors who've helped me kind of build the brand, and I don't know, caution me about certain things and help steer me in the right direction with certain things. And shout out to Jeff Mahan from Split Nutrition and Brooke Harris from Good Milk.
Shout out.
Good people. So that's pretty much how it started, I guess. And here we are.
And you, it
You
gets
tried
my,
it. You liked
I
it.
did, dude. Yeah, I was about to
Yeah.
say, it gets my stamp of approval. And I'm a guy, I like coffee, but I'm not like into coffee, you
Yeah.
know? So like, I go to work, I pop in a Keurig K-cup, and that's the extent
Okay.
of what I do. So, and what I'm getting at, when you sent me that sample, like super easy to do. Like, like I didn't know it was a thing of powder. I'm like, what do I do here? And, but like, it was super easy. The instructions were on it. Like, I encourage
Yeah.
anyone to get some of it because it tastes good. It does make you feel good. It's funny because I want to say so. Kurt Ozon, he plays guitar with Luke Combs,
Okay.
and he's involved with Raise Rowdy and stuff too. And he's way into coffee. I think so. Like, I'm gonna go with that because I've heard him
Okay,
talk about it
sure.
a lot. But anyway, I gotta get him some of that because he's way into like that kind of. He has like, I think they have like the special rig set up for like the fancy coffee. I don't know any of the terms, but I just call it
Okay.
like a special rig. But
Special rig.
absolutely,
That'll do.
yeah. It gets the Raise Rowdy stamp of approval. I could confirm that for sure. And
That's awesome.
Yeah, and if you can explain to the people, and mainly me, because I still can't understand what turmeric is and what it does to you, like what the benefits are to it and stuff. Can you explain
turmeric
that?
Is a root. It's commonly found. But you can find it raw in supermarkets usually, and in powdered form. And so in Good Day Latte, it's in powder form. And it's just packed with crazy health benefits. It's one of the most studied, if not maybe the most studied, herbal supplement out there. It's super common, mainly known for anti-inflammation benefits, but also been shown to improve brain function, digestion, lowers blood pressure. It's just like an all-around super food,
Yeah.
I think pretty much everybody could probably benefit from it.
Yeah.
It's definitely helped me, like riding bikes and playing drums. I noticed it in my hands a lot, like, you know, and working out too, going to the gym, like my hands will, they take a beating and they get kind of stiff and a little like puffy. And when I have Good Day Latte or just turmeric as a supplement in general, you know, it's like visibly different after I take it. I can see it in my hand as well as feel it. So shit works, you know?
Yeah. They're going to start not only coffee shops, they should put that in like GNCs and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some like nutrition shops or something like that. I could see that, but,
Yeah, man. I've been trying to get it into, considering getting it into stores and things. And, you know, speaking of steep learning curves, that's a whole other thing. I'm just like, holy shit, there's a lot to all this, different than playing paradiddles and rock and roll.
Right. Do you have like a team or is it all you?
It's pretty much me. I have a co-packer now. And you know, friends and family, I'll bounce ideas off them and get feedback from people and stuff. But yeah, it's pretty much just a one man show.
Yeah. Damn. So, entrepreneur over here.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah. The unexpected routes life can lead you down, can call this chapter. But yeah, man, it's been cool. It's going well.
Yeah, it's a little different than a lot of musicians. They just automatically go to, I just made my own whiskey, here it is, and it usually tastes like shit. But
have you Goodbye June, right?
Yeah.
They made a whiskey, right? Have you tried that?
I haven't.
No? Okay. I might be wrong, but I think I saw like a commercial that they did their own whiskey, Goodbye June whiskey. I'm curious to try that.
Yeah, I'll have to try
It's weird then. That I brought that up after you were like, yeah, they make a whiskey and it tastes like shit. And then I'm like, oh yeah, have you tried Goodbye June? I don't know if it tastes like shit. I don't know. In those guys, it probably tastes great, but.
Yeah. It's like, I can't think of like, and it's usually like the guys like Jesse James Dupree from Jackal. It's like, you know, like the band is like that hillbilly hair metal shit. I love it personally. It's always fun to listen to. But like, you know, getting a whiskey from that, it's going to be a little rough, you know, from Jackal.
But it'll do the job, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not picky with my whiskey, so.
Nice. I wish I knew whiskeys better. Whiskeys are like one of those things that people, I don't know, friends know, like you probably know all this stuff, like this technically isn't a whiskey if it comes from here and that's aged in this. Dude. I'm just like, I don't know.
Yeah, because I'm from Kentucky, so like we have all the bourbon, we have all that stuff, and I'm clueless on it. I'm primarily a beer drinker, so like when it does come to like bourbon and stuff like that, it's just over my head. My kind of a funny story, my buddy, he got married a couple years ago, and we were on the wedding party, and he got everyone, there was like four of us, I think, he got everyone a nice bottle of like bourbon of their choice, and then he gave me like, here's Rebel Yell, and it's like one of those like $15 whiskeys that you get at like the cheap stuff, which I was like, dude, that's fine with me. I'm totally fine with that. As long as it gets Rebel me drunk.
Yell. It's a good name, Rebel Yell.
It is, yeah.
That's not a Billy Idol brand.
I thought it was. That's why I got into it. I thought, oh, cool, it's Billy Idol's, but I think it has nothing to do with Billy Idol.
What's Billy Idol up to these days?
Dude, I don't know, man. Well, I don't know what he's been up to.
He's still around.
I think he plays like small like amphitheaters. I think he was here last year, and it's like, all right, cool, Billy Idol. I never got too into him personally.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
White yeah. Wedding's a dope song, but
yeah. Dude, speaking of I don't know, singer guys that are famous. Yeah. You guys are you? Do you do the social media on Raised Rabbit?
Yeah, I do.
You do?
Yeah. We kind of all do it. Yeah,
dude, the fucking Fred Durst clips you guys do crack me up every time. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, that's all me. I'm not even like ashamed of it anymore. Limp Bizkit is like my favorite band of all time.
It's legit, I'm not sarcastic or ironic.
No, like I love Limp Bizkit so much, and Limp Bizkit is very easy to make memes about, and like everyone loves them, so like, and they're so like like you don't have to put a lot of thought of it because it's just Limp Bizkit, but like there's not a real story behind it. I think the first one I did, it was I synced Elvis Presley's like 68 special up with Break Stuff, and it happened to match up perfectly, and they were like, his lips were moving the same, dancing the same, and that hit like 7 million like views or something, and like my followers just shot up, and I'm like, all right, the people love the Limp Bizkit memes, so I just kept churning them out. But
the last one I think I saw was a guy singing, older guy, probably wasted, singing karaoke to Break Stuff, right? Was it Break Stuff?
Yeah.
Or,
Break Stuff, yeah. Oh, yeah. I try to post like two things a day, like on that account. And it's like, whenever I'm in doubt, I just go on YouTube, type in like Limp Bizkit funny, and then something will pop up. But, yeah.
Damn, dude, posting twice a day, that's no joke. That's a full-time job.
Yeah, we got, the guys who own Raised Rowdy now are two guys, Nick and Matt. And Matt is like, in particular, is like one of those guys. He's a whiz when it comes to like the algorithm and the social media stuff. And he texts me one day. He's like, dude, post two things instead of one thing. I'm like, okay. And I did. And sure as shit, like the interactions just skyrocketed within like days. I'm like, I don't know how you know this shit, dude, but it's working. But
damn, I'm gonna have to get some pointers from you guys then.
Hell this yeah, man.
Eludes me all the time. I'm just like, I don't know what to post out there. Posting? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, we gotta collab and shit for real. With all like, especially with the latte stuff, man. I think we could do something cool there.
Let's do a Limp Bizkit spoof.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You gotta have you dressed awesome. Up, you gotta get like a red cap, put it backwards, your baggy jeans, and
I think this is a fantastic idea.
This might work. But,
let's do it. Yeah, I've been experimenting more with shit like that. Like, I did this skit a few weeks ago, a month ago. You saw that? Yeah. So, I mean, trying to do stuff more like that that's, I don't know. Like, yeah, like skits, I guess. Like, so maybe this is number two for Good Day Latte.
Yeah, man. That'd be because when you first
Fred Durst on the tiger.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Put the red cap on the tiger too.
What? Fred Durst all day.
Yeah.
He has a jazz club out here, I think. Have you been out here to that?
To where? Nashville?
Or L.A.? I think it's White Rabbit Rose or White Rabbit or something. I think Fred Durst runs it or owns it, or
does
maybe he's just there sometimes. I don't know.
He just kind of appears places.
Yeah.
I did see them for the first time in Louder Than Life in September, and whether you like Limp Bizkit or not, like their live show is something to experience. It's just like a fantastic time. You got to get ready to like get like thrown around a bit, like in the pit. There's no escape in the pit. Like the thing just grows, and the whole audience becomes the pit, basically.
Nice. I didn't actually know they were still playing.
Dude, they're low key on like a comeback, dude. They really? Put like an out. I swear, they put it. I keep my finger on the pulse of Limp Bizkit, and they put an album out. I think it was like 2 years ago now. And ever since then, like they start playing live shows, hitting like the festival circuits, and they're back, dude. They're all the way back.
All right. Go Limp Bizkit. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember seeing live footage, or maybe they did like a live DVD or something back in the day, and those shows were crazy, like huge.
Like Woodstock production. 99 and shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I mean, yeah, so I can only imagine. Pits. I went and saw fucking Meshuga a few years back, and that was a hell of a mosh pit experience. I was at the Wiltern, so it has the levels.
Mm-hmm.
And each level was its own mosh pit, like just all the way to the back of the.
Oh my gosh. That just sounds dangerous.
It was pretty intense. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love that band, but also seeing them live, like, they're not only like sonic abuse, they're also like volume, sonic, lights getting pushed around. It's just like
overwhelming. Yeah,
it's an intense experience for sure.
Yeah. Is there like, is that your like go-to metal band? Do you have like a hard rock metal band that you prefer to listen to? Because I know you're a big jazz guy, so I don't know like what else you dive into.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, those two things are probably musically what I'm most interested in. Yeah, jazz and metal, forms of metal.
Yeah.
I love Meshuggah. I think my favorite band of all time is Every Time I Die. Rest in peace.
Yeah, you told me about them, I think, last time.
Yeah, they like released an awesome album called Radical, and then they just broke up like shortly after that.
Was this recent?
This was, yeah, within the last 2 years, I think.
Oh, damn.
Something like that. Sucks. Yeah, because the last, well, when I was still with Dirty Honey and we were doing the Wolfgang co-headline tour, one of the crew guys for Wolfgang was, I think, the merch guy for Every Time I Die for years. Mm-hmm. And at that time, that was whenever that was, 2.5 years ago now or something. So maybe it's been a while since they broke up, but we were talking about them breaking up then.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess it's been a while. But yeah, I love Every Time I Die. There's a new band with some of those members called Better Lovers.
Okay.
So it's a few of the guys from Every Time I Die and the singer and I think the guitar player or just somebody, another friend of theirs from Dillinger Escape Plan. Mm-hmm. They started a new band. Do you know that band, Dillinger Escape Plan?
Yeah, I know that one.
Yeah. Yeah, they broke up too years ago.
Yeah.
But maybe not. I don't know. Yeah, I like those guys. Better Lovers, it's a new one I'm into. I discovered a new guilty pleasure. It's a Killswitch Engage song. You know Killswitch Engage?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm kind of not super into like that style of metal personally, but they have one song that I'm like, all right, this is pretty fucking cool. But yeah, I think those, I like Animals as Leaders. That's more like prog, mm-hmm, instrumental. Yeah, I would say are the go-tos. Those are the go-tos for metal.
Yeah. I hate to bring him up again, but Limp Bizkit's drummer, John Otto.
Like, talking about Limp Bizkit.
because like, if you listen to his drum work, like, and I don't know how familiar you are with LB, but his drum work, man, like, it kind of has that, like, jazz swing to it. If you isolate it, like, it's definitely the metal, more metal leaning, but, like, the way, like, the shuffle to it and the way, like, I don't know, just the way he moves around the kit, like, it reminds me a lot of that cool, like, swing jazz kind of shit, like, amped up to 1,000.
Okay. I'm going to have to check it out again. I'll do a little listening session, revisit some Limp Bizkit. I used to kind of be into them a little bit because I was into Korn as a teenager.
Oh, yeah.
And I know Korn and Limp Bizkit, they're like homies or were homies or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, interesting. All right. I'll have to
I'll burn you a disc.
Okay. Dude, I'm still on the old laptop. I can play CDs still.
Yeah, so, do you have a big like physical music collection, like whether it's vinyl, CDs, or anything like that?
No, unfortunately not.
Yeah. Are you into that at all, really?
I mean, I think it's cool. Like when I go over to my dad's, he's gotten into vinyl, and you know, it's cool. He's got a cool setup. He's got like the pretty good vinyl collection at this point, and he's got like all 70s, like what is it called, the receiver and the amp and speakers. It's like all like the shit of the 70s, and he's just like,
it's worth like thousands of dollars now.
Yeah, he's like totally in heaven, like reminiscing on, I don't know, the high school parties. Was listening to music on this equipment, or I don't know what, but
yeah,
I don't know. I had a couple cases of CDs back in the day. I don't even know where they are at this point. Probably in my fucking storage thing somewhere. But
I'm a sucker for that shit, dude. Like vinyl. I mean, so I got a shit ton of CDs. I even got fucking right here. And it helps that I inherited a lot of this from my dad. He just gave them to me. Nice. Like, I got like cassette tapes and shit just sitting there.
You should have showed me a Limp Bizkit vinyl. Like, I thought you were about to bust it.
I have one right over there. But yeah, man, it's just kind of fun. It's in the long run, I think, like when it's financially, it's probably a money pit, because vinyl is like a new vinyl that you buy is probably around like 30, 40 bucks each. So you just go get like the used ones for like $2 that look like shit. But, you know, if you're not picky, it don't matter.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of cooler anyways, because it's like vintage, OG, it's got character.
Yeah. I got the first two Dirty Honey ones, I think. I got those, funny enough. And it was one where all four of you signed it. And I think you had to like, I don't know if you had to pre-order it. I forget. But yeah, dude. Still spin it. We still spin them over here. Nice little music.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
How's the new record? Have you heard the new record? What do you think?
I like it. I don't know how much you want to dive in on it, but
yeah, probably better avoided.
Okay. That's
but,
fine.
I just thought
Let's put it this way. I like the first two better.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I got you. We'll talk off the air about that if you want. But, awesome, man. And speaking, and like, so when I first talked to you the first time around, that's around when you just left, or around, you know, like kind of fresh off leaving the group. And you were talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like, one of the reasons was because it was like the touring, and did it get to be like too much or something? I'm trying to remember what it was.
It was a lot of things. Touring constantly and not being able to have like a life outside of that really was a big one. You know, it's the type of thing where you'd try to, you know, you're looking at the calendar schedule for the next whatever several months. And you try to, you know, there's windows of time where it's like, all right, I can, you know, go visit family during this time, go visit girlfriend or what, you know, plan a trip or something just to like clear your head from touring and working. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, you know, you have to just, if a gig comes up that pays well and it's good exposure and whatever, like you got to do it. And so it was that kind of situation where like I felt a bit like a monkey, you know, a puppet on strings, you know.
Yeah.
And that combined with, you know, at the time we were about to go back to Europe after a short break, and my grandma, who I was very close to, passed away. And so that was the first time I lost like a close family member. And that experience really fucked me up, honestly. And so having just experienced that, knowing that in like a couple weeks we're supposed to go do a full-on tour in Europe again, and then following that another US tour, and it was just like, dude, I need a minute. I can't fucking, you know. And at the time I was trying to like feel it out, like maybe there's a way to, I don't know, have a sub temporarily or something while I just like go through this process for myself. That, among other things, creatively, you know, is one of the things, you know. And having other interests, too. Like, you know, this, like, Good Day Latte, this shit, like, this is genuinely, like, something else that I was passionate about and was wanting to get into, so.
And that's, like, all you, too, you know? Like, that's your baby, I guess you could say. That has to be a pretty cool thing.
Baby.
Yeah. But, the reason I asked, just to, like, get a refresher, is because is that something, like we're pretty far removed from then now. Is that something you would ever consider maybe forming a group, joining a group, going touring again? Or is that kind of out the window? Or
I wouldn't say it's out the window. Yeah, I mean, I would consider it. It would just depend on circumstances, what the music's like, who it's with, how long the tour, whatever. Like, I mean, I'm for sure down for, like, I mean, I was told Mark, John, and Justin this back in the day, too. Like, it would be great if we could just, like, a month on the road, show after show after show. Like, that's doable, but when it gets beyond that, and I don't know, maybe they would disagree or other people have different opinions about this, but like to me, yeah, 4 weeks is like you kind of need a break after that.
Yeah.
And beyond, you get into 6, 7 weeks, 8 weeks of touring. It's just like, and back to back, you only got a couple weeks off in between. And then you're doing shit in between, signing vinyls, you're fucking shooting music videos, yeah, doing one off festivals. And it's like, yeah, it's full on, you know?
Yeah. So like maybe like smaller scale stuff you might be into.
Maybe
now.
Smaller like, scale stuff, or maybe like maybe a metal project of some sort, something more crazy or right, whatever.
Yeah. It's just, right. Yeah, yeah, that's fine. My damn outlet fell out. Hold on, give me a second. This stupid sure, ass, this plug fell out of the wall. And we're live, folks. This happened with another guy too, and it just, the audio sounded horrendous. I'm just clanking around, bumping my head.
Cue the Jeopardy music.
But let's talk about your like lessons and what in like your teaching and yeah, what you're doing now. Is it, I know when we first talked, that was in the, you know, I don't even think it launched yet when we talked last. So how's right, it been going with that? Is the reception good?
It's been slow. That has taken a bit of a backseat to Good Day Latte and just keeping up with, you know, gigging in Los Angeles and sessions and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I still teach. People reach out and I teach private drum lessons. And I have a couple very dedicated students over the last year or so, and it's been really fun to work with them. As far as the site and everything, yeah, my idea initially was like to create kind of like downloadable lesson videos for, I guess, geared towards more advanced players. But lately I'm thinking of, I don't know, when the time is right. Quick backstory, like I didn't go to music college. I just studied privately with drummers that I liked around LA. I would go to the Big Potato and whatever. I'm going to go tonight actually and watch Zach Danziger play. You know, I'd go watch these guys and then just ask them, be like, hey, I just moved here. Like, can I take a lesson with you? Like, and that was my school for years. And so kind of through that process, I met this guy named Jamie Font, who was actually a bass player. His, I don't know, I guess claim to fame was he played on a Chick Corea record in the 70s with Steve Gadd and those guys, and was friends with Stanley Clark, and he's in that like 70s jazz community as a bass player. Was really tight with Chick Corea. Anyways, I think after he kind of maybe stopped playing with those guys, he created his own music school. He just taught lessons out of his house, but it was to all instruments, vocalists, drummers, guitar players, piano players, whoever. And it was like step-by-step, super methodical music lessons. So you tackle where like, okay, so I have some friends who've gone to USC and gone through the jazz program and, you know, they do the university thing. And I didn't do that, but my understanding of it is that you have to do a certain amount of curriculum in a certain amount of time, and it's sink or swim. If you can actually internalize any of the stuff you're learning, great. If not, then just pass the test and move on, and maybe you never revisit that shit. Yeah. Type of vibe. And so this was a completely different approach to music education, and it was specific exercises targeting specific skill sets within music. So rhythm, all these different aspects of rhythm broken down in step-by-step form. And you don't move on to the next thing until you meet his standards within that given area. Yep. So, and, you know, I just thought that was like a really smart and practical and just a better way to go about it. That way, like, you're actually internalizing these skill sets before you move on to the next new skill set, you know? So you're really building your music skills, your musical ability. And where was I going with that? I don't know. Just that was I met this guy, I guess was the point. This was his method. And I met him through friends of friends. I think at the time I was thinking about going to music school. I was like, man, Berkeley would be sweet. I don't know, MI maybe, and I was talking to people, and I think there was a jazz piano player and somebody else I encountered, and I was just talking to them, telling them this is kind of what I'm thinking of doing. And they're like, honestly, I remember the piano player. He was like, I went to Manhattan School of Music, studied jazz there, and I also studied with Jamie in his private school. And I would say, hands down, Jamie's courses it's the best music education I've ever come across. Like, it's so,
wow,
so powerful, simple, to the point, no bullshit, and effective. And so hearing him say that, I was like, okay, I'm in, like, for sure. This is something worthwhile. And I spent 3 years studying privately with Jamie, working basically just on rhythm. And I would say that if I had not studied with him, I would never have had a shot at a career in music. It was like that profound for me, that it changed my whole concept of rhythm, and especially being a drummer, that's important. Not necessarily changing your concept of rhythm, but improving in a practical way all your rhythmic skills that are needed, you know? And so all that to say that, you know, I have this education and material, and it was so crucial for me, and I like, it's so important to me. And not a lot of people knew Jamie or had an opportunity to study his stuff, and his material, I think, still is just kind of like the few people who studied with him got exposed to it, but that's kind of it. Like, it's not really going anywhere. So I would really love to, share some of what I've learned with musicians who are interested in developing their time, their rhythm feel, because his stuff, you know, I know a lot of, there's still even professional musicians out there that I've played with. Some of them still have problems with like rushing and dragging and losing beat one and, you know, simple things like that. And, and this material like completely addresses that in a step-by-step way. And it's not just for drummers. Like, every musician can practice this stuff just as effectively as any other musician. And with the lesson site, like, one thing I'm, all this long-winded explanation just to say that this is where my mind's at with that, in terms of potentially setting up some sort of, I don't know if it's one-on-one lessons or like a, you know, you pay one fee and you get the material, or I don't know how it works, but yeah, sharing some of Jamie's exercises or what he shared with me, what I learned from it. I would love to share that, you know, at some point.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's awesome. When you first started working with him, was that a, like, from where you were before with your drumming skills, was it a big learning curve, or did you kind of ease on in there? Was it pretty easy for you at first? I know you said it was like a big deal to you, so I assume it was probably a big kind of shock when you went into all his teachings and stuff.
So yeah, it was, and this is a common thing that I think maybe a lot of musicians don't realize, is that there's sort of this pitfall of like playing from rote motion, playing drums by keeping time by tapping your left foot on the hi-hat and playing without actually listening and using your fucking ears. I didn't need to say fucking right there.
That's all right. I say it all the time.
Use your fucking ears. No, but kind of. But so it, you know, I was very much in that before I started studying with Jamie, where I wasn't actually listening and playing time from conception. Like, it's a conceptual thing. Like tapping your leg doesn't know anything about time. It can't keep, it's just moving. But like, yeah, what makes you be able to tap your leg in time evenly without speeding up or slowing down is that you're paying attention to the rhythm. And sort of, Jamie would always explain it as like, comparing it to the using the underlying even flow of time, like just life, like the fact that the earth is constantly moving around the sun at this even rate. And we set our clocks to it and we, you know, the sun goes, it's yeah, part of life. There's this even flow of time just happening always. And so he's like, try to come up with a way to kind of conceptualize that if it's, almost like a white noise or just like a, there's like this background motion and that's what you're measuring your time against, you know, when you're playing music, to how to tell if you're speeding up or slowing down is like you're tuned into that just time in life, you know?
Yeah. That's,
and he would point out this thing like, that I just kind of never realized, and thought was really fascinating, is that like when you're playing time in music and it's steady, you're in sync with the steadiness of the earth, because yeah, that's kind of the be all end all. So it becomes this like, in a sense, cosmic, like spiritual, I don't know. It's kind of cool. That's the spiritual part of it is sort of a separate thing from, but there's really like a practical method to all this. And it's basically just yeah, getting to using your ears properly and playing from a conceptual place of time rather than relying on tapping your foot or relying on another musician or something, you know. Yeah. I don't know if I'm doing a good job explaining it, but
no, I get what you're saying, man. Cause, I play the drums. I've been playing for, I think it might be like maybe 13 years now, like just totally on my own, that kind of thing. Yeah. And, I remember, and I kind of, I see what you're coming at here. It's just like, there is that big, like, you don't know how much you can improve until you like sit down and do it. Like the first example I think of is like the metronome. I went probably 10 years and I never used a metronome. I put my headphones on, turn a song on, and play to it. Like simple as that, right?
Right.
So when I finally thought I should probably like, you know, you always think your timing's great. You always think you're on the money and everything. But once you turn that metronome on and you like sync it up, it's like, all right, like that, you need to like, there is a method. There is a technical way to lock in that way, which that might be the complete opposite of what you just said, when, because that's, you've talked about,
no,
more of the spiritual,
that's kind of
thing,
it,
but,
yeah, I mean, yeah, well, I mean the spiritual thing, that was kind of just like a, that's like a side, just
yeah,
like, by the way, like it is kind of cool, mm-hmm, that when you're playing time steadily in music, it connects to this greater experience of time on earth, and that's kind of cool. Maybe you could say it's spiritual,
yeah,
that'd be a side thing, but like yeah, I mean, to what you're saying, yeah, playing with a metronome, yeah, you can play to a metronome, but like, and this is what I failed to realize, and this is why Jamie's material was so like eye-opening and important to me, was that it made me realize like there's playing to a metronome or playing along to music, but then there's actually noticing where exactly you're putting the attack of your note.
Mm-hmm.
In relationship to the metronome, which is kind of like, I mean, that's the definitive thing,
yeah,
for musicians. And yeah, you know, cause you can be all over, but you're still playing with the metronome, you know,
yeah,
playing with it, but like, it feels like shit and sounds like shit and is sloppy as shit.
Yeah.
So you gotta like do your due diligence. And this is what Jamie was so great at, was, realizing what these specific elements of, for example, rhythm were. What are the specific skill sets of rhythmic skill that every musician needs to have, and what's the most just direct way to target each of those things? And a big part of that was like, yeah, different exercises that would get you to really use your ear and listen for if you're slightly ahead or slightly behind of the,
mm-hmm,
click, and being able to like you're like fine tuning how accurately and consistently you can play. And it, you know, some people I know argue playing to a click, and they're like, ah, it makes you feel stiff. It takes out the human. And like, I think there's a
There could be like a
way.
cool dance you do between that, though. I feel like you could have
Yes.
feel and, you know, the technicality of it, right?
Exactly. And so that, yeah, I don't know.
And that's kind of what it reminds me. I talked to Tim from Primus, the drummer from Primus on here, and he kind of said that same thing, like kind of what you've been saying is like, yeah, you have the click, 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 right? But there is a way to zone in and fine tune it to where you could like kind of dance around it, but still keep it in the pocket, still keep the timing right, stuff like that. So it's pretty, and that kind of leads me, you think like, you hear a lot of it with like guitar players, like, oh, like Jimmy Page, great guitar player, but he was sloppy. And then like you got the other end of it, you got guys like, I don't know, so the virtuoso guys who are like all technical, right? Like the drummers, like I want to say, like I hear people say sometimes, like Charlie Watts, obviously a great drummer, but it's like he was kind of sloppy sometimes. Then you got guys like Buddy Rich or Neil Peart, those guys who are all like, you know, right on it. Is it, do you think there's room for those two spectrums? Like you can be all feel, even if it drags from here to there, or is it like you got to keep it technical, you got to keep it like timing down? I don't know, if is there like a happy medium, you think?
I
Or
think,
what's your
yeah, I
thoughts?
think they're, I mean, it's a good point to bring up. I mean, I think, yeah, of course, there's room for both ends of the spectrum. But I think the common denominator is that it still feels good, and fit with the music. You know, Keith Moon all over the place, but like it still felt great and fit the Who.
He was like an alien or a unicorn, I should say, when it comes to like, you got the greatest drummers. It's like Keith Moon was like damn near the lead instrument in that band. You know, it kind of felt like everyone else was behind him. Like it's kind of wild how that happens.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, but I think if it feels good, it feels good. And I think there's a difference between being loose, like I don't know, Jimmy Page or Keith Moon, and being loose or sloppy and it feels like shit. There's a difference. I think there's, and to me, I think the difference is this. I think, if it feels like shit, okay, so something can be off of the click, but if it's inconsistently like off the click, if you're one beat to the next, it's ahead or behind by too much. I think that's loose, but it feels like shit, so it doesn't work, and that's where you sound kind of just sounds bad. But somebody, I would argue that somebody like Keith Moon, it's like, yeah, maybe they're like ahead or behind, but in a way where the whole instrument is ebbing and flowing more smoothly or consistently off, you know, something like that. There's a consistency to it, and I think that's the difference. And I think that developing that skill, that's kind of one of the skills, is like being able to be consistent regardless of if you're like dead on the money or like a little leaning back or whatever, you know, like. So I don't know. That's kind of how I've always thought of those
As long as you make it
spectrums.
work and everything, like make it sound good, like because everyone knows, especially if I think like during a live show, guitar player plays the wrong note most of the time, no one's gonna bat an eye at it, but you hear when a drummer fucks up, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
So you gotta be consistent for sure, man.
No, that's a good point. I think about that a lot too, and yeah, it's interesting to think about, because it's like, yeah, fucking a lot of those guys were super sloppy, but like it still worked. Like, why does it work? And I think that's what I can come up with, is that it's I don't know, sloppy in a consistent way or something. I
Yeah,
don't know if that makes sense.
maybe it's just because I play the drums too that I understand what you're saying. Hopefully, people understand what you're meaning there. I think they do, because I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense. And also, I was going to ask you this earlier, but what are you rocking on any new kits recently? Any cool?
Just kind of just this guy mainly. Still the same old trusty black DW. Actually, recently I resurrected the 66 Slingerland.
Okay.
It is pretty fun to play on. It's this kit that I've had for, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. And it's been through hell. I got it in Portland when I was visiting home from a guy on Craigslist for like $300. It was a hell of a deal. It was like original mint, not mint, but like very nice condition Slingerland in kind of a unique color. It was like a dark sparkle, like a midnight sparkle, mm-hmm. but faded in a cool way. And
yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I had that and I played on it for a couple years. That was like my main gig kit. And then I got so before I was with DW, I was with this guy, Jeff Kirsch Drums out of Portland, Oregon, who's amazing. Any drummers listening to this, go check out Jeff Kirsch if you don't know him already. Mm-hmm. Drum wizard, builds amazing stuff. I was getting ready to play some of his kits, or buy one of his kits. And, his whole thing was kind of like, you know, finding ways to improve the tone and the way the bearing edges are and just like all the nuanced shit that can make a drum speak the best way that it can.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, cool. I'm going to try to do some of these things to this old Slingerland. And one of those things, stupidly, was to scrape off the finish. So I fucking scraped off the finish, took a bunch of chunks of wood out with it because it was all glued and old. Yeah. And like, so I kind of fucked him up pretty badly. But then I still played on it for a long time. And dude, it's got like broken bass drum hoops and like broke. it's a beater, but like it still works. And I think one of my last little videos I posted, I played it on a track for the client and it sounds fucking awesome. So it's been fun resurrect this old guy.
The old beater.
Other than that, though, now it's the same old D-dubs.
Oh, yeah. We were talking over text like a week ago or so about those old Rogers kits. And I remember I played one once in my life.
I was
going to
send
you
a video. I just forgot. Oh,
you're good. But I think, like, that's the only, like, vintage kit I've ever noodled around on, and dude, it's amazing. Like once you do play those old vintage ones, like it's a completely different sound. If you like, it's kind of weird to explain. I can't really explain it very well, but it's just cool. It's like effortful to play.
Yeah, they feel buttery to me.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
It's just like, oh, this just feels warm and like buttery and like makes me want to hit every drum more.
Yes.
Like, yeah. Now I get
and
that.
They just
yeah.
Look
Rogers
so
too.
Cool.
Yeah. Rogers is special. Those are special old drums. I had a set of those too, a couple sets, but yeah. I think those are probably my favorite. They're kind of rare a little bit, I think.
I think they are. And I wanna say, and I could be way off on this, I think those went under Yamaha eventually. Or like they got bought out. I don't really know how that works, but I think they eventually turned into Yamaha or something. I don't know.
Mm. Well, I know they're back, like they're remanufacturing under the name Rogers.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, because I know one of the bands we were playing a lot of shows with was that band Plush.
Oh yeah, Mariah Formica and them.
Yeah.
All the girls. Yeah,
So I forget the girl, the drummer's name, but she's with Rogers now.
Okay. Was it the blonde Rogers one? I think she might have left. I don't know if she's still with Plush or not.
There was
I don't
Brooke,
know if you
right?
Remember.
One of the gals was Brooke.
It's Brooke, yeah.
So she
rocks
too. She's
good.
She quit Plush, right? And then,
They got
I don't know much about those guys, but those girls, but Rogers drums.
Yep, I know. I got it. My premiere is it's about done. Unfortunately,
you got a premiere.
It's breaking apart. Got a premiere. I want to say it's an XPK or something like that. Like green. I could have that. I think it is an XPK, like exclusive or something. I got it. Man, I got You know, like when you get your first kid, it's like those generic brands. It's like mine was called like Thunder or something. And then, and then one day my parents like surprised me with they knew a guy who worked at like was like a supply guy at Guitar Center. He's like, you guys want this drum set? And it was a Premier like XBK. So I'm like, yeah, I'll take it. So
nice.
Yeah, that's what I've been rocking with for 10 plus years now. And it's finally starting to it's wearing thin. The lug nuts can't stay in. They're falling apart. The hoops are just fucking, it's breaking apart. So I'm gonna have to look into the Rogers.
Yeah. Check out their new stuff. I don't know if it's good. I mean, probably is. But yeah, Premier, they got good stuff, dude. The Signia.
I love Premier.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the Signia, that's one of the,
I think
sought
so.
After.
Yeah, don't they know. Don't have like a big line nowadays, I don't think. Like they don't have many different options nowadays. I don't think. I check on them every once in a while. I wanted Premier because Keith Moon's my favorite drummer, and like I think he played Premier, so that's why I got his Premier. But
oh, sick. Dude,
yeah, man.
Speaking of weird brand, like starter kits, my first kit was not a brand drum. Like there wasn't a manufacturer on it. It was just, I think somebody like built it from, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
But the symbols were, you're never going to guess, the Laser was the brand.
Laser.
Laser. Symbol.
Whatever sounds cool.
It did not sound cool. I guess the name is cool, but they did not sound cool at all.
Sound like hitting the garbage, the old tin garbage can lid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mine fucking, I remember because the one I got, Thunder, my Thunder kit, came with cymbals that were like, I played them for like a month and they literally warped like this.
Yeah.
It was like, something's not right here. But
dude, you got to resurrect the Thunder and you got to find some Laser cymbals.
Oh, yeah, I know. I that might have to be my primary kit then.
Thunder, Laser Thunder set up.
Oh, yeah. But, Corey, man, thanks for hopping on. This is a lot of fun. It's good catching up. And,
of course, man.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks before we head out, I know we talked about it throughout the episode, but if you want to plug whatever you're doing, like Good Day Latte and everything, the floor is yours.
Sure, yeah. I mean, well, first of all, if there's anybody interested, I'll just put a feeler out there. There's nothing like officially launched or that I'm doing with this right now in this moment that people can sign up for or purchase. But if there's musicians hearing this that are interested in it, like really seriously improving your time and rhythmic skill, shoot me a message on Instagram at Corey Coverstone and just see where that goes. Put a little feeler out there, see if there's anybody interested in that. And then, yeah, I mean, if there's anybody interested in healthy powdered beverages, or if somebody knows a coffee shop that's interested in maybe adding a golden latte, turmeric latte to the menu, reach out, send me a message. You can order it from the site. Yeah, we're looking for more and more coffee shops and like boutique stores to collaborate with. And yeah, I guess that's it.
Hell yeah, man. And like I said earlier, this coffee is great. I don't do ads on here, but I will happily make that an advertisement because like it really is good, easy to do. Or easy to make, I should say. And I don't know how easy it is to do, but it's easy to make on and drink. It's easy to drink, but
we gotta do a rowdy special drink or something like a whiskey Good Day Latte or something.
Damn, I'll put that in my notes. Oh, I think they'd be
Durst,
all about it.
Whiskey Good Day Latte,
dude. Fred Thurston.
Rowdy. Durst.
Hell yes. But yeah, man, Corey, like I said, thanks for hopping on. It's always good catching up with you, man. Wish you the
thank
best.
You so much
and
for
everything.
Thanks for the support too. I mean, I know like, you know, how the interviews and stuff go, but and now that I'm not like, you know, a rock star anymore, I appreciate you guys very much like supporting and you know, keeping in touch. Means a lot. So thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Absolutely. So, everyone, you heard the man. Get the check out Good Day Latte. Check out his socials out. Shoot him a DM if you're interested in drum tracks, maybe anything like that. Send a feeler out there. And also, while you're at it, check out Ray's Rowdy, Rowdy Alternative. We're on all the socials. Give us a Google. So thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you guys next time. My boots would look good on your bed, and I bet you can do some crazy things with those hips. You've been turning me on all night, so why don't you and I run and tell your friends who's gonna take you home tonight? Try to make a mess of this simple